I picked up the phone and someone said, you know, Madeleine Albright's chief of staff.
Hello, I'm Jessica Cadso-Collins and this is the Inside the Jewel Vault podcast. Each episode, I ask my guests to choose the six gems or jewels they would put into their fantasy jewel vault. I hope you enjoy listening. This episode of Inside the Jewel Vault with Vivian Becker was recorded remotely. I am delighted to welcome Vivian Becker to the Jewel Vault, an authority on jewellery history and design, a leading journalist and jewellery historian. Vivian has encountered an incredible array of jewels and designers in her 40-year career in jewellery. Since working for an antiques jewellery dealer as a teenager, Vivian was hooked as much by the personalities of the trade as the jewels themselves. She became a journalist specialising in jewellery and wrote her first book in 1980, Antique and 20th Century Jewellery, which is held as the standard work on the topic. Since then, she has written 15 other volumes, including one with US Secretary of State Madeleine Albright, and contributed to many more. Her articles on everyone from Lawrence Graff to René Lalique are commissioned by the top titles of the world's press. For four decades, Vivian has curated exhibitions, judged awards and lectured, earning a global reputation as the expert's expert, a discerning arbiter of talent, trends and outstanding design. Welcome, Vivian. I can't wait to see what you've chosen for us inside your jewel vault.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Well, you really are the authority I turn to time and time again, and have done, actually, right from the very beginning of my own career when I was 18. You've devoted your whole life to jewellery, haven't you? Who or what has inspired this long career?
First of all, thank you so much for all the compliments. And I have to say that I've been learning for all those years, for the 40 years, and as much as I've learned, there's so much more to learn, and I think that's what keeps me going, and that's what inspires me day to day. That I feel I'm extremely lucky in the job that I do involves studying and learning every single day. In terms of who inspires me, well, you know, going right back to the beginning, of course, I did start by working in the antique jewellery trade when I was young. I was about 18 and took a holiday job. And of course, that was my first inspiration. Then I got really hooked on jewellery history. I stayed there. I actually rebelled against my teachers and my family. I didn't go to university. I just stumbled on such an incredible kind of, what can you call it, almost a subculture, which I'm sure you'll understand, Jessica, of antique jewellery dealers who welcomed me with open arms into their fold. And I loved it so much that I stayed for nearly 3 years. And that's really what inspired me and still inspires me every day.
Wow.
And after that, I did manage to get a job as a fashion assistant on a women's magazine through a friend. And that was my start in journalism. It is quite interesting that I just always wanted to be a journalist or a writer at that time. And it was the National Magazine Company, which is Hearst. And I, at the photocopying machine one day, I saw a man with headed notepaper, and it was headed up antique collector. And very shyly, I said, "Oh, I used to work in the antiques market. Can I write an article for you?" And he said, "Yes." And I thought, oh, my God, this is easy. Everyone says it's hard to get into journalism. Anyway, I did find out the next day that the poor man had been made editor of the newly acquired magazine called Antique Collector. You know, that meant that's why he was photocopying some headed notepaper. And he would have said yes to anyone who'd offered him an article, because he suddenly had to fill a magazine with articles. So
wow.
It was just, yeah, a bit of lucky timing, I think. Yeah, the law of asking, I think it's called. That was my first article. And then I eventually joined his staff on Antique Collector and then started freelancing. But I just carried on writing about antique jewelry, and then perhaps more recently contemporary jewelry, but always with a historical perspective.
Well, do tell us about this first beautiful piece that you put into your jewel vault.
So I've started with something really spectacular, I think, and the dragonfly female corsage ornament that is by my all-time hero, René Lalique. And it's in the collection of the Gulbenkian Museum in Lisbon. And for me, it is perhaps the most staggering piece of art jewellery that's ever created, or should we say yet created. We don't know what's going to come. But as I mentioned, I through collectors and through my studies, I became entranced with Art Nouveau jewellery, jewellery that was made for a very brief time, very short but intense time of creativity from, say, 1890 to 1910. I was lucky enough to meet a collector in the States who opened up his collection for me. And together we realized there was no book on Art Nouveau jewellery. So I embarked on that study. It took me a long time, took me several years. And after that, I was invited by the Goldsmiths Company to curate an exhibition of the jewels of René Lalique. And obviously Lalique was the leader of Art Nouveau jewellery. I was young. It was an incredible commission. I was very, very fortunate. And as the exhibition, we were also very fortunate to work with the Gulbenkian Foundation. Mr. Gulbenkian, I don't know if you know, he was a great oil magnate, was known as Mr. 5%. He was a great collector from around that time, from around 1900. And he spotted Lalique's talent. And he commissioned from him a series of extraordinary, something like 150 extraordinary art jewels, which are now in the Gulbenkian Museum. And the centerpiece of that collection is this dragonfly woman corsage ornament. These were conceived as pure works of art. I guess it was the kind of commission that every artist dreams of, you know, money, no object, no limitations on creativity or imagination, and with the result that the Gulbenkian collection is an extraordinary vision of the artistry of jewels. I think, you know, they're definitely the greatest art jewels that exist at the moment.
You've written over 15 titles under your own name and then contributed to many, many more. And you've covered such astonishing topics and so many incredible personalities. Which of them was your favourite to write, do you think?
Yeah, they were all fascinating in their own way. I was lucky enough, privileged enough to be invited to collaborate with Secretary of State Madeleine Albright on a book about her brooches. I remember the phone call very well. My daughter was very young. I think I was feeding her fish fingers at supper time, tea time, picked up the phone, and someone said, you know, Madeleine Albright's chief of staff, you know, as you do. They asked if I would be interested in collaborating with Secretary Albright on a book about her brooches. And so that was the start of an amazing adventure.
Wow.
And it was completely fascinating for me, yeah.
Such an incredible personality as well, isn't she?
She's a true inspiration on every level. I went to meet her. You can imagine how nervous I was when she was in London, just to see if we would get on. I was incredibly nervous. She had a beautiful brooch on. Then afterwards, she said she was nervous in case I didn't like her brooch enough. So Yeah, it was wonderful. I spent some time in Washington with her, going through the collection, listening to all her incredible stories, how fascinating they were. And she's a wonderful woman. She has an extraordinary ability to move from being very serious, very profound. As I'm sure you know, she's just supremely articulate when it comes to international relations, and then she can switch in an instant to being mischievous, witty, funny, you know, with a wicked sense of humour. So it was really, really, really great fun. And a true privilege, privilege.
It must have been. So you've also written about all sorts of people, new talents like Michelle Ong as well. How did you find, because she has a sort of dreamscape. All her jewels are astonishingly imaginative.
She's a great, great talent. And I'm, you know, I'm glad to say as well, she's also now a great friend. And We were introduced, many years ago by Joel Rosenthal of Jar, the great Jar, who I have to say it was also thanks to Joel that Secretary Albright invited me to work with her. So Joel has been an amazing mentor of mine.
So, Vivian, you've started us off with a spectacular jewel. So please tell us about piece number two in your jewel vault. And this is an amazing piece by the designer you were just talking about, the enigmatic Jar.
Yeah, I guess everyone knows that Joel Rosenthal, whose initials make up the name Jar, who's just about the most famous jeweler on the planet. But not only that, I mean, he's a true genius. And in terms of jewellery history, I can safely say that he changed the course of contemporary jewellery history when he started in the 80s and 90s to come up with an entirely new vision for jewellery design that was layered with historical and cultural references, that was rich. Rich and emotive, you know, at a time when jewellery was, you know, in the 80s, all about, what can you call it, just sort of linear surface stylism. And I always say that jewellery at that time wasn't really about anything. And Joel started telling stories through jewellery. He is an artist. And I think single-handedly, he transformed the jewel into a work of art again, as Lalique had done in his time. So every so often, our world throws up a genius like this.
So tell us about the piece.
Yes, well, I think this is interesting because it tells another story. It joins sort of two parts of my work, because it's an Indian-inspired jewel and it's one of the masterpieces that's in the Altani collection, you know, of Indian jewelled arts. So, this piece has got a double meaning for me, because I was invited to catalogue the contemporary pieces in the Altani collection, and this is one of them. And it's a brooch, obviously, of Indian inspiration. It's got an architectural silhouette in the form of an Indian arch, an arched window, a cusped arch, so beautifully curvaceous. And what's so incredible about it in terms of the technique and the storytelling is that the front of it is composed of slices of pure, very pure rock crystal over white agate. And at the centre is an octagonal emerald, an antique emerald. And the back of the brooch is in a kind of gold openwork to represent a pierced screen, you know, the jali of the Indian harem. And you know, it's the combination of the theme and the technique that is really so breathtaking. I think it just, as only Joel can do, really captures the the flavour, the romance, the whole emotional and sensory impact of India and its culture.
Yeah, and inviting you to keep looking and look again.
Yes.
Love that.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. And I mean,
such a wonderful piece.
Yeah, and the technique is incredible. And you know, Jha has done this. He pushes his artisans to absolute perfection. And when he has an idea in his head, he continues and continues until he brings that to fruition, until he finds the craftsman who can, make his dreams come true.
So exacting, yeah. Well, your third piece in the Jewel Vault is by jeweller Daniel Brush, who is just as much a perfectionist as Joel Rosenthal, but he works each piece by hand himself. So please tell us about the jewel you've chosen and a bit more about Daniel. He's an artist jeweller you've written a book about too, isn't he?
The book on Daniel Brush was one of my most recent books, and I have to say, yeah, it felt like the culmination, although I haven't finished my career yet, but it definitely felt like the culmination of everything I'd worked on up until that point. Daniel, how do you describe him? You know, he is the ultimate Renaissance man. He's a towering intellect and an extraordinary craftsman. But even more than that, he's a sort of poet and philosopher, and his ideas about jewellery have inspired me, and he's helped me to think about jewellery in different ways. He's pushed me to question a lot of preconceptions, and I absolutely treasure all the time that I have spent with him. And so I've included in my jewel box one of his carved steel poppy brooches. So I think part of his philosophy is to challenge perceptions of preciousness, of value, to question what the values that we put on jewellery, what makes them valuable. And he has spent many years exploring steel. Gosh, there's so much to say about Daniel. I think of it as his quest for enlightenment. And he created this series of what I think ravishingly beautiful, poetic, cut, carved and engraved steel and diamond set poppies. And what I love the idea of transformation in jewellery, which, again, that first Lalique corsage ornament is all about metamorphosis. So Daniel certainly manages to transform a hard, tough, industrial, intransigent material, steel, into something light and limpid and soft and sensual like the poppy. I just think that element of metamorphosis is really part of the story of the jewel. He hand carves everything. He works in, he doesn't, the word designer is anathema to him. He's an artist. He just will pick up a piece of metal and work straight into it. He just follows wherever his hand and heart and eye takes him. The other important point to make is that he sets these jewels with antique Indian diamonds, so they have a very, very soft and secretive sheen to them. And Daniel has also come up with an ingenious way of wearing a brooch, by attaching a magnet to it so that there's no pin and it doesn't, ruin your clothes.
Yeah, so we've got one of his pieces, one of his poppies in your fantasy jewel vault. And I can see a bit of a brooch theme developing here, Vivian, because you've also got another brooch. It's the fourth one in your jewel vault.
Oh, yes.
And it's a very exquisite piece by Boucheron. Is that right?
Yeah, so this for me is the quintessential Art Deco jewel. And I guess the reason I love the brooches or corsage ornaments is that they allow so much freedom. You know, they allow total freedom of expression by the artist and designer. You don't have the usual limitations of a ring or a necklace size. Really, can be can be anything. And this corsage ornament was made in 1925 by Boucheron, and it was shown at the Exposition Universelle, the 1925 exhibition in Paris that was later to give Art Deco its name. It wasn't called Art Deco at the time. These were just modern jewels. And this is, it's a very dramatic hardstone mosaic. It was designed by Lucien Hertz and mounted by a company called Bisson. So the hard stones have been beautifully carved, and it's, again, it's that mix of fluidity but control. So it's really a pure composition of form and colour and line and texture. And yeah, for me, I just think it is the most sensational of Art Deco jewels. I mean, it was an explosion of colour that was one of the defining features of Art Deco jewellery. And this came from the impact of the Ballet Russe, you know, which opened in Paris in 1909, I think, Scheherazade. And I always love to imagine the audience of that first performance of Scheherazade in Paris would have been, the women would have been dressed in, you know, Belle Époque costume, very refined, very pale, very, very proper, very ladylike, tightly laced into their corsets, and then on the stage in front of them. And often try and imagine what that would have been like, was this absolute vision of vibrant colour and sensuality and stylization. And I think it's you know, it's impossible to overestimate the impact that the Ballet Russe had on all of the decorative design. And I think you can see the impact in this wonderful jewel by Boucheron.
Another piece that you have in your fantasy jewel vault, which I am longing to hear about, is a piece from one of the greatest icons of the 20th century, Marlene Dietrich. So you've chosen a piece that she owned, is that right?
Yes, that's right. Yes, that it was made for her. I think it was commissioned for her by Van Cleef and Arpels in 1937. And again, for me, this is really one of the seminal pieces of this style that it's called retro modern. I tend to call it the cocktail style of the late 30s, and it was the style that emerged exactly in that year, 37, with another exhibition in Paris, and then followed up by the World's Fair in New York in 1939. But it emerged out of the ashes of Art Deco. It was much more curvaceous, much more three-dimensional, but still very, very stylized. It's a sensational design, but I also chose this because it's very important to me to say and to share how jewellery is such a powerful expression of femininity, of individuality, of individual style. And also, I just love the way in which jewellery has charted changes or the evolution of femininity or female ideals through the late 19th and 20th century. And I think that at this time, really from the 1930s onwards, certainly right through the mid-century, jewellery became, as I say, the most powerful expression of individuality. And I think that's characteristic of 20th century design in general, you know, the whole cult of individuality in terms of the wearer, but also the maker.
And this isn't another brooch this time, is it, Vivian? It's a massive bracelet.
No, it's a bangle. It's a huge cuff bangle. It's of rubies and diamonds, and I think it really reflects her style, you know, what I call her, the taut tailored glamour. You know, as you know, she wore very masculine clothes. She had a very, very definite point of view, very, very well-defined style, and I think this totally captures that style and her character. And so it's got this sort of dynamic swirls of rubies, but the outline is very crisp and strong. It's a very powerful piece of jewellery. She wore it often on screen, I think notably in Hitchcock's Stage Fright, as lots of the Hollywood stars did. You know, they wore their own jewellery in the film. It's very much in her style. It's a perfect fusion of Van Cleef and Arpels' style and her individuality. So I think it just oozes with Marlene Dietrich.
And if you had it to wear, where would you wear it, Vivian?
It's definitely evening wear. It's definitely not daytime wear. Though you'd wear it for cocktails, dinners. Although I have to say, it's probably the perfect Zoom jewel. Yeah, it's,
yeah. Yeah, I was just going to say, it would certainly cause a good visual impact.
Yeah. It was very, very photogenic. And it just became totally associated with her style, with her, you know, her strength, that kind of tailored look, tailored femininity. Yeah. This bangle, a jarretière, is a very, very stylized version of a buckle. A buckle bangle, so, you know, very, very stylized, very late 1930s cocktail version. So it's source of great regret to me that our stars don't commission, don't wear jewellery in the same way. It's a great pity.
Yes, there seems to be a gulf.
Yes.
So we've looked at five fabulous pieces. There's another very intriguing piece in here. They look incredibly ancient and completely different at the polar end of the jarretière bracelet that you've just told us about. They're a pair of earrings. Tell us more about these.
Yes, I just have to have something ancient in my jewel box, and these Hellenistic gold earrings that incredibly intricate, and I do feel that ancient jewellery like this is the template for modernism. In a way, when you look at earrings like this, there's nothing better. I think they're perfection in terms of the craftsmanship, the power that they have. They're just the sheer beauty. And we're going back to inspiration, of course. You know, ancient gold work has been an inspiration through the millennia, obviously to me in my writing, but to the jewelers of the 19th century in the archaeological revival period, as these ancient treasures were unearthed in the late 18th century and throughout the 19th century, then jewelers were absolutely captivated and enthralled by the beauty and the power and the presence of these ancient jewels, and they have always set about trying to recapture and reproduce the gold work, the granulation, ancient Etruscan technique of fastening tiny gold granules to surfaces of gold, which is just a very, very complex technique, and it just puzzled goldsmiths for hundreds and hundreds of years. So I think these are possibly the best pair of Hellenistic gold earrings, probably from about the 4th century BC, that exist in the world today. And they're like earrings that were discovered in a burial mound that's now in Russia on the Black Sea, called the Great Bliznitsa. There was a Greek settlement of goldsmiths in the 3rd and 4th century BC. And I think two reasons that I love these. One is that they tell the story of the goldsmiths of antiquity, and this is a subject that's particularly important to me, because I think the goldsmiths were revered at that time. Here is the spiritual aspect to jewellery, that ancient goldsmiths were revered. They were almost like priests, so they were believed to have almost a direct line through their work to the divine, a channel to the gods. And I love that idea that there is this kind of otherworldly spiritual aspect to goldsmithing. And the other important point about these earrings is that they're in the collection of the Albion Art collection in Japan, which is probably the most important private collection of historic jewels in the world, put together by Kazumi Arakawa, who has become a really great friend and a mentor in recent years. He has an incredible eye, and he shares my belief in the spirituality, the importance of jewels, really beyond being adornment. You know, that all jewels really have this talismanic origin to them.
So this amazing collection of jewellery in Tokyo, is it solely ancient work, or does he also collect modern?
No, it's from ancient up until probably about the 1930s, and just, you know, the very, very finest pieces from each era and each style through history. And again, I've been lucky enough to spend a little bit of time in Tokyo with Mr. Arakawa, been treated to one of his very, very special presentations and lectures on the history of jewellery.
And so his collection really does trace this reverence for an enduring quality, something that goes beyond the material worth.
Yes, absolutely.
Of each piece.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know Mr. Arakawa, his dream is to create a jewellery museum. It will be somewhere in Japan, and hopefully that will happen in the foreseeable future. And then we can all go and see this world-class
marvel.
Collection.
Among the many things you've done, one of your great talents seems to be to bring people together through exhibitions, and notably a new major one, Gem Genève. So please tell us a bit more about this show.
Gem Genève is a new trade show for trade and private collectors that was started by two very well-known, well-respected dealers, antique jewellery and gemstone merchants in Geneva. And they invited me to curate a contemporary designer showcase as part of their mission, really to show the whole richness of the world. So, you know, from antique jewellery right up to contemporary pieces that we hope will become the antiques or the heirlooms of the future. And that was, again, it was a wonderful opportunity. And it gave me a reason to scour the world, to look for individual designer jewelers, artist jewelers. I look for jewelers who have a very strong point of view, very well-defined style, nothing derivative, something new, something that will keep our jewellery world moving forward, you know, that would be part of this whole continuum of thousands of years of jewellery history. And it was very exciting, very rewarding, because the designer showcase, we now call it the Designer Vivarium, was very well received. We found that visitors and collectors, they love to discover new talent, but they also love the opportunity to actually talk to the designers, to listen to them discuss and explain their creative vision. It's definitely an initiative that I'm going to continue.
Mm-hmm. Oh, good. Because so much of what you do is telling us, your readers, about amazing talent and incredible people that you've found and come across, and it's just so inspirational that there's so much talent out there, and that's what's so exciting, that it seems to be an expanding universe, and you're right on the button.
Yeah,
all corners of it.
Luckily, I mean, I try. You know, I've got my antennae switched on all the time, always looking for new talent. And you know, it's good for me because I kind of test my own taste, you know, all the time. When I look at something new, I guess I've got a filter of various criteria that I apply, and again all the criteria are informed by the historical perspective. I find it absolutely invaluable. You have to know what's been in the past to understand what's truly new, and I think I find that the best or most inspiring of contemporary design always has that mix of a kind of reverence for the past, reverence for the rules, and then the audacity to break them. And I guess, you know, if I could pinpoint one thing I look for, it's that.
Vivienne, you've got a fabulous fantasy vault for us. You really have. Thank you. And of course, normally the Jewel Vault contains six special pieces from the careers of my guests, but you've actually chosen seven pieces to put inside your vault. So who am I to quibble with an expert of your standing? I just feel we should have asked you for double the amount, because it's just fascinating hearing what you have to say about each piece. So this seventh piece, this is a very personal piece, isn't it? Something close to you, I believe.
It is.
I wonder if you could just let us hear it.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. Where can you hear? Can you hear it?
Yes.
I've just slipped it on.
Isn't that wonderful?
It's a charm bracelet that belonged mm-hmm. to my late aunt, very dear aunt. I was particularly close to her. She was my mother's sister, younger sister. The noise I find so evocative, because it would always announce her arrival into the room or into the house, and I was always so excited to see her. And she was the one in the family who absolutely adored clothes and jewellery and makeup, and I was always in awe of the way she looked. And this charm bracelet is so much part of her, and it expresses that the intimacy of the jewel, how intimate it is in terms of its relationship to the body and also to our persona, to our character. When she passed away, she left me the charm bracelet, which of course I treasure. It's not at all valuable. It's got some antique seals on it, quite a few, but I think they're not gold. We used to call them gold filled. It's got some modern things on it, but it's the memories that it holds for me. And the association, and the sound. It's very, very typical of the 1950s. It just became so much part of her and her persona. And I just remember all her beautiful, beautiful clothes and how they're all lined up in her wardrobe, and how she wore the bracelet on her beautifully manicured hands with those very long painted fingernails. It's deeply evocative and deeply emotive for me. And as I said, particularly love the sound.
Yeah. So she's the sort of epitome of femininity in as you grew mm-hmm. up as a child.
Yes. Yeah.
A lot of us have a figure who'd be like that.
I'm just absolutely riveted by all of it. And very, very close to her.
Wow. Well, thank you so much for sharing these seven pieces. Now, the rule of the vault, this is where I'm going to make you feel a little uncomfortable, is that you have to just pick one to keep safe forever.
Oh, yes.
In your fantasy vault, if you could have one and only one piece... Which is yours.
I suppose it would have to be the charm bracelet, humble as it is, with its, some of like tourist little tatty souvenirs mixed up with the antique seals. I guess it would have to be that, because, in the end, jewellery is about creating and preserving personal memories.
Well, that's wonderful. Oh, Vivian, thank you so much for sharing your fantasy jewel vault with us and taking us inside your jewel vault. It's just been such a magical journey. Thank you.
No, thank you so much for the opportunity. It's been really, really wonderful. I've enjoyed it.
Well, thank you very much for sharing your life and work in jewellery through these seven beautiful objects. Thank you.
Thank you, Jessica. Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed listening to this episode as much as we did recording it. You can find images of all the wonderful jewels we've been talking about, along with lots more information, at our website. Just go to vipjewelvault.com/podcast. And I want to hear from you. Tell me, what special pieces would you put into your fantasy jewel vault and why? Every so often I'll be collating your stories into a podcast of their own, so please get in touch, and of course rate, review and subscribe, so we can keep these conversations as meaningful and joyous as we can. Thank you.